back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're into positively almost Super Bowl time, but most importantly, now that the Ravens are out of season and they'll be fighting with Lamar Jackson the next 8 weeks, it's almost time for pitchers and catchers to report. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour in Catonsville this Friday. We're going to be giving away the handful of holiday cash drops we have left. I'm going to be getting the new Wishbone 50th anniversary Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. Also, our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. And you buy two, you get two free. 5 years, 0% financing. It's a pretty good deal. Go to 866-90-NATION and windownation.com. Alan McCallum has been my friend for going on 3 decades now. I did think about Jeffrey Mayer the other day, somehow, some way, and I never think of Jeffrey Mayer without thinking of you, Alan. And your name came up as something at the Manhattan Transfer and Strathmore and the Kennedy Center and the Honors Program and Eddie Vedder singing songs. It is good to have you back. It makes me feel like it's almost baseball season, and maybe this is the year that me, you, and your sister get together and go to a ball game together, have hot dogs proper.
You know, Nestor, it's funny because it was just – I just read about Jeffrey Mayer, and I can't think of where yesterday. And I looked him up because I Googled him because I knew that at some point he'd been involved. I knew he'd been a player, and I knew he'd been involved with some type of scouting. And I wanted to sort of see, just out of curiosity, what was going on. And I thought about you that as well. And then just a couple of short hours later, you texted me about meetings. So, yeah, it's been a wild ride the last little stretch of time here, for sure.
Well, when I see John Angelos yelling at, you know, Dan Connolly, and I have Luke on my team, and I'm getting thrown out by the National Football League and the Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals and anybody. But believe it or not, the Pittsburgh Steelers are the last team that still considers me a legitimate media member after 31 years of doing this every day of my life. But the John Angelos thing brought back baseball, right? And I know he didn't mean for it, and he just sort of picked Martin Luther King Day, and he and the mayor, and he's going to stroke a $5 million check, and it's going to be a feel-good and, like, all of that. But the fact that it came, like, 5 minutes after the Ravens were eliminated, right, and the Lamar thing was hanging in the balance at that point on the holiday. Everybody was off last Monday as well. And the fact that baseball came roaring back. So it's not, hey, I saw Adley Rutschman at the Wise Markets, or hey, I ran into Gunnar Henderson coming into the airport and he had his girlfriend and they're doing Winter Fan Fest, and or hey, I ran into Brandon Hyde, actually lives here in the offseason. He lives in my tower and I ran into him having sushi downtown or having a crab cake. It's the Orioles are like this dead offseason thing that they go away. They're like a bear. They're like dormant. And you know, literally. And they come back out on television once every 2 weeks on Masson, the network that's made for them, to show spring training games. I mean, everything about it's laughably awful, other than Mike Elias sort of knows what he's doing. They brought in all these young players. They've taken advantage of being awful. Part of being awful is you get the number one pick. Somebody should explain to John, when you have two number one prospects, because you pick first in the draft every year for 5 years. So I would just say, this should be the good time, and this is supposed to be the time. And Alan, I'll leave it at you, because you and I have been at this so long that we used to fight about it. You and I got personally sideways over the Angelos family and whether they had any integrity or not. The apple is not falling far from the tree, but with this kid and his cadence and the born on third and think I hit a triple and like all of that goes on to it, right? But the amazing part is there was a point for him, his brother, his mother, for all of them to be the next thing. I mean, I remember 5 years ago writing a Dear John letter. Dear John and Lou, I asked if they were Rocky or Bullwinkle, and I didn't mean the cartoon. I meant Rocky Wirtz from the Chicago Blackhawks, who was the son of a miserly, awful owner. I mean, Jim Irsay may be a good example of this. Might be a little weird, but he's won championships. 35, 40 years later, they're there. He, you know, he's magnanimous to a point to where people do like him and cheer for him a little bit. He's different than his father. Not same, not all good, but different. This was their chance to say, we're not dad. We're like, we love you. We're Baltimore. Dude, these kids are a mess. And clearly they're, I mean, with each other, they're a mess, but seeing this display last Monday in front of Brandon Scott, what did you make of the press conference?
Well, first, let me say something, Nestor. We used to argue about the Orioles. I never argued with you about whether or not the Angeloses have integrity now, because I didn't know them, not personally. And I didn't have enough interactions with them. My only interaction with Peter Angelos was when he left something in his car, left something at the Meyerhof when I used to work there, and I had to take it to him before he drove out of the parking lot. That's literally the only direct that's the only direct interaction I've ever had with Peter Angelos. So
you weren't standing in the locker room at the Cuba game or anything like that, right? No.
No.
Luke was in the locker room with him one time at Yankee Stadium after like 12. He showed up, right? But so Luke's been in the room with him once, and I've been in a room with him. I was in a room with him at the Hyatt. He did the show famously in 1997. I still have that tape up there. But like, he drove by me in a Cadillac down in Harbor East 15 years ago. Like, I saw him, but like, there's no human interaction with the old man that he's gone. This kid, however, went to Gilman, walks the earth, lives in Nashville, perceives himself to be the owner, showing up at a press conference, writing $5 million of dad's money, family money. I just found all of it. I just find it to be so sleazy, bro. Like, and I love baseball. You and I love each other because we love baseball. But like, if this is what the front facing is, no wonder they hide these cats in the kitchen. Really.
My argument with you was never about the integrity of the Angelos family. It was about whether or not anything positive could be on the field could be produced with the way they were handling it. Now, obviously, the answer to that was largely no. There was a nice 5-year bastion of success where Duquette and Showalter helped pilot a ragtag team to the best record in the American League over the course of 5 years. That was a gorgeous island in the middle of a crap storm. But
I saw Nate McLouth's name the other day, and I'm like, man, I ain't thought of me some Nate McLouth in a decade, you know, literally.
I remember Chris Davis picking Nate McLouth up over his shoulder and like parading him around the infield after a big late win, I believe, against the Rays in 2012. Look, what happened during that conference – press conference was certainly fascinating. It certainly speaks to some things that we've seen about the Angelos family. We're in an age where more and more, whether it's politics or sports or what have you, people want to control the narrative. And it's easier than ever, particularly for sports teams, to control their own narrative, because so much of what is sent out happens through their own websites, media portals. Masson has a media arm, right? They control their own narrative. So when you get into it, I mean, I know I don't need to tell you any of this. So when you get into a space where people can ask real questions, I'm sure they feel more vulnerable because they don't have to experience that on any regular basis. And look, I'm Black. MLK Day is a special day, but let's say that it is a useful tool for industries to look
sports magnanimous. Wash. I'll use the word sports and, wash. How about that? I'll use that one.
And in touch with culture, people, society, it's a useful place to put here. Look how great we are because we recognize this day. And it can be held up in those points. Is that what was happening? I'll leave that for everyone else's personal speculation. But Dan Connolly asked legitimate questions. If you say this isn't the day, then you actually have to provide other days in which they can be asked. And I think most people would argue that the Orioles haven't done that. I know he did some things on another platform.
Apparently they didn't even ask any real questions. Apparently they got him down to Cross Street and just, he handed them the questions and it was all the team's great. Team's going to be great. What about the lease, dude? What about your family? What about the future? What, you know, like
the questions about Connolly asked actually weren't even that. They weren't that.
He didn't
tumultuous.
Ask a question. He gave him a forum to just speak on
yeah.
the, 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 vision for the team for the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, there was no gotcha question there, literally.
No, not at all. So the reaction to it is telling for that reason. Look, in a lot of ways, the Orioles are in better shape at this moment as a team on the field and in throughout their system than they've been maybe in the time that we've known each other.
I would say they have more possibilities now
yes.
than they've had in a period of time. And they're so downtrodden at this point from people caring about them and having relevance and like all of that, that they can build something.
Yes.
You know, they can get people on that don't have an association with the 13 chapters of Peter Principles I'm going to be re-releasing with the great artwork of the great Mike Rossigliano, by the way, in the coming months, because people should know the history and they should say, we don't want this. We don't want what it's been. We want something different. The only way it's going to be different is to not have the Angelos family involved. I mean, it's very, very clear. Like them suing each other. If you've read the lawsuit, and I have twice, it is Alan, the lawsuit. Have you really sat and read it, the document?
I haven't read the whole document. I know the particulars. Look,
the amazing part of it is the old man, all the money he made, all he sacrificed, as hard as he worked, and I'll give Peter all of that because that's who he was. I mean, I don't have any half-truths about him. His work ethic, you know, the kind of old-world man he was and all that. The last thing in the world that if I would have written that lawsuit just on the website, he would have sued me to put me out of business saying it was all untrue because it was so tawdry and they're so private.
Right.
And everything about Peter has been meant to protect these kids and make money, make money, make money, beat people up, beat people up. And then, like, all of a sudden, all of their dirty laundry is aired while he's still breathing. Every awful thing is out there in a family. I mean,
but by their own hand. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
That's the thing. So what happened didn't happen because some Watergate investigation. It got put out there because they couldn't keep it in house, and it leaked to a point that everybody knows. I mean,
it wasn't worth $1 billion to each one of them to not talk about this, like literally.
And look, I mean, as when you're in the situation, and I understand that they put out a really nice press release after all that leaked, but you would think, again, in an attempt to control your own narrative, at some point on a Friday evening, right, when you have the weekend for it all to pass before everyone comes back on Monday, the way the White House would do, you go out and you get all the people in all the media in one place at one time, and you do a filibuster where they ask every possible question they can until there are no more questions to ask. And then it goes away because the next thing, whether it be Lamar Jackson or the Ravens or whatever else happens in the world.
Opening day, and they start the season 7-2, and people want to come, and they get some pitching. And the next thing you know, they're 31-21, and there's interest, and the Ravens don't play till September, and they dealt Lamar. And I mean, the Orioles have a real chance to grow. They can only grow. They can't shrink anymore.
I think any really good PR person would tell you, in that situation, it makes better sense to just get it all out, since it already is, and every question that can be asked, so that it can just blow away through the next 24-hour news cycle, as opposed to let it linger and linger and linger. We're, 8 months out from the story leaking, somewhere between 6 to 8 months, and nobody's had a chance to really ask any questions about it. And just the reality that, hey, there was a real statement that the Orioles could move. Now, whether that actually happens or not, say something about it. Let people ask questions so that you can either push away any fears anyone has about it in your fan base, in the population of people that are going to give you money, or to, you know, say this is what's going on so that you can get the new fan base excited, whatever it is. It certainly makes more sense.
I love when a guy says I'm transparent and then says, but I'm not answering any of your questions.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you just listen to what he says, I mean, he says he's going to answer the questions. It's just like the second thing he says is that I'm going to answer your question, but, and by the end, he says, I'm not going to answer your question here. But what, it's been a week now. And I guess the question ultimately says, if 100 reporters show up at the offices of the Baltimore Orioles, will they actually open their books, right? I mean, that's the next piece to the story, because he invited everybody down a week from Martin Luther King Day.
Does that include the black guys and the Latino guys in the media? I'm just asking. I'm just wondering out loud ahead of time.
You know, I'm going to let that just simmer out into the air, Nestor.
Alan McCallum is here. He has been my friend. I still love Alan, even though we don't get together and talk baseball and go to baseball games, but it's baseball season. Where's your baseball head at this? I mean, you're traditionally not a football guy. I mean, you know, on the record for all that, all these years, you've always been a baseball guy, not a football guy. Not a football hater, but more of a theater guy in various ways and music and different things. You just don't love football. Hey, I don't love MMA, right? I don't love drag racing. I mean, there's things I don't like. Baseball has been one of those things that I, you know, has been in my life my whole time. My last name's Aparicio. Don't tell anyone. But this offseason for the Orioles had promise, and for people vested in it. And I talk to Luke about this all the time. And Mike Elias saying, it's time. It's go time. Here we go. We're not going. And then there's the thought of Elias being closer to being out of contract than in, and how pivotal all of this is in regard to, and again, we've already spoken to ownership for 15 minutes here, right? We could see what's going on with ownership. This is the clown in front of it. He's got a brother he hates who hates him. I guess Brady Anderson's on Team Lou. I got to pick a team now. I can't pick Team John after that outburst. Not on behalf of all my media brethren. But this offseason, they were supposed to grow, do things, market the community, add players, become more other than the owner being a fool, they haven't made a headline at all of any kind other than waiting for Martin Luther King Day for the owner to be a fool. I mean, they haven't had a headline in 4 months.
I'll be honest with you, Nestor. I actually really like how they've handled this offseason, because when they said that towards the end of the season, where, you know, we're going to go, the first question I had in my head was, where do you go? You're going to add position players? Why? I mean, you half the guys that you have in your farm system that are top of the line are shortstop type guys, which means they're going to move to second base, third base, shortstop. Some of them might play the outfield. You've got a ton of outfielders. So what? You don't know what they are yet. So it felt to me like this season was we're going to play these kids and find out what we have. If you find out that some of them aren't as good, but aren't ready yet, that's good. If you find out you've got six guys who are ready to go right now, with Santander about to be a free agent, with Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins getting to the second half of their controlling control in their contracts, why wouldn't use this time to decide, hey, we've got three outfielders ready to go to replace these guys. Trade them, bring in more pitching.
Well, that would be my issue, is the trading deadline. If you're alive and you know, by all accounts, they better be alive. They don't need to be in first place or have a 10-game lead, but they need to be threatening to be a playoff team in July. If they are that, that's when you go and say, oh, there's right. A number two pitcher on the last year of a deal. We have to give him $15 million, but we'll take him on. We'll deal off some kids and here we go. We've got an arm for October, right?
I saw 1,000 guys on social media talking about how much they wanted Carlos Correa or Xander Bogaerts. My thought was, what? You just drafted the kid of an all-star player to play shortstop. You've got Gunnar Henderson, Jorge Mateo, and a host of other guys. Why would you spend $200 million on a guy who is a very good player but can't stay healthy, is about to be 30 years old, when you don't know what these guys are? I mean, that didn't make sense to me. Obviously, pitching is a piece, but you sort of want those pieces to line up for when you know for sure you're ready. And it felt to me like 2023 was we're going to put all these kids out here and see what we've got. And then once we have a sense of what we've got, then right, you make deals at the All-Star break, right before the trade deadline.
I wasn't a guy that thought they needed to go spend $100 million they didn't have in the offseason, but I do think there's a level of commitment to keeping fans happy, to give fans something to be excited about. I don't know what that means. I mean, Jones autograph session. I don't know, but like something that keeps people interested, especially given the owner being a creep. You know what I mean? Like now I am 1,000,000% confirmed on the record, on video, creep.
Look, I like Michael Givens coming back. Maybe this is controversial, but I'll say this. I think Michael Givens' career has been highly underrated. Why do I say that? Because he pitched in Camden Yards, the Colorado Rocky Stadium, and in Cincinnati, three ballparks that were, at the time that he pitched at Camden Yards, the cheapest home run ballparks in the country and in the sport, and pitched successfully in all of those places. Not to necessarily a Hall of Famer, All-Star career every time, but you look at his numbers, he did that successfully. I think there's something to be said for that. And I think coming back here right now is a good piece. I thought a guy like a Nate Eovaldi or Michael Wacha, who's still out there, who have had success, who aren't necessarily the number one tier, like a DeGrom or Scherzer or anyone along those lines, but we're going to be affordable pitchers who would be, you just spent a couple million dollars moving the left field wall back. Let's put it to say that you can get pitchers now. Let's put that to the test. I thought that would be those players would be a reasonable way to go. They didn't do that. I don't know why. But to spend a ton of money on guys that you may have a younger, better, cheaper version of in your farm system, just to say we did it, didn't necessarily make a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm fine with it. If they bring in another starter too, again, Michael Wacha's out there. He's a guy that I was interested in. I was more interested in sort of a Nate Eovaldi. But if they go out and do that before the end of the off season, they certainly have an opportunity to make a trade. The Marlins just traded one of their young pitchers, and they have more opportunity to do that. There are ways to make this offseason look good to the fans, but I don't think it's an unsuccessful offseason at all. Now, what happens during the year if Gunnar Henderson lives up to the hype, if Allie Rutschman takes another step, if we see Heston Kjerstad come up in June or July and continue the torrid hitting he's been doing since he's gotten healthy, those things could make a lot of people very happy and make things look good. People in Baltimore will hate to see a Cedric Mullins or a Santander get traded, but with what they're trying to build and what they have in place, you can make deals to bring in the pitching pieces in particular that you're looking for that make sense for teams that suddenly find themselves in a playoff hunt and feel like players of that caliber can help them. So I like the restraint that they've taken. They spent some money on arbitration. Nobody likes to hear that. I understand that. And they've made some James McCann is a nice backup catcher. They've brought some really interesting guys. I predicted like halfway through last season that Nomar Mazara would end up in the Orioles system at some time this year. They're still looking to see what pieces are out there that they can repair, that can catch fire, that they can help tutor. So I'm fine with it. If they get through this season and they find things and then they spend no money at the end going into 2024, then I think we can have the conversation about whether or not this organization is ever going to spend any money again. The Tampa
Bay
Rays.
Well, spending money would be their own guys. Like, you know, they're going to spend money if Adley Rutschman's $180 million piece, right? Like, that's when they're going to spend money.
The Tampa Bay Rays are a model that we could debate. There are things that I don't like about what they do. But you know what? Nobody can argue that what they do is unsuccessful. The Tampa Bay Rays have a really interesting model. I think the Orioles
But it's less than ideal.
Fans in Baltimore want players that will hang around for a while that they can root for, not guys in jerseys that are going to be there until they get too expensive. But ultimately, Yes, it's less than ideal, but it works. What I do like is sort of the Rays with Evan Longoria and the Atlanta Braves with locking up some of their young guys. When you see that these players have long-term talent, then you give them the 8 or 9 year deal in their second or third year, as opposed to once they become a free agent. The idea of giving a guy who's 30 a 12-year, 13-year contract just so you can spread out the average annual value is just – it's ludicrous to me.
Well, in retrospect, the notion that they would have given Machado Chris Davis's money, I don't know that it really would have made anything better or made him better or made the city better or like any of that, right? Like I don't – they had that chance to do that with Machado. He's the only guy that they really –
yeah.
Could have married. I mean, they married Adam Jones early. They married Nick Markakis probably at the right time. They married Brian Roberts for a minute and a half, right? I mean, they had some guys they gave some money to, J.J. Hardy. I mean, they paid some guys along the way. Sure. But they also let Nelson Cruz get out the back door they never should have done. And to some degree, the Machado thing will be that test with Rutschman head, whoever the next guy is. Hey, dude, I don't know if you know this because I know you're not a football fan, but the Ravens are going through that with this number 8 guy they got too, right? You know what I mean? Like there comes a point where you pay him or you don't, and if you don't, you take the draft picks and say we're moving on, but then you don't get sad when Manny Machado is playing in San Diego. But you're saying they've also paid him $158 million since he's been there.
Well, let's be clear. Let's be clear about this. We talked, the two of us and everybody else talked about, do you pay Manny Machado? And the person and the player that he was when he was wearing black and orange was not the guy I wanted to marry as a fan because he was immature and he did some really dumb things. He was a great player. Everybody could see that. But you want your Fernando Tatis Jr., right? He got the money and he's been a knucklehead ever since. And I wasn't convinced that Manny was the guy that you want to build an organization around. Now, as it turns out, Manny Machado has taken a significant leap forward in his maturity and his approach to the game and his leadership. And I applaud him for that because not everybody goes that way. And I'm not sure I would have said that he's the guy I would put my money on in that. He wasn't the guy I would put my money on in that moment, but he's done it. So character matters. You know, and you ask yourself the question, are these the right guys to do that with? And it seems as though character was an aspect of what they did, what they considered when they brought in guys like Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, I think you want to ask yourself that question. And if the answer is yes, they are. If their character and the way they carry themselves on and off the field mirrors that, then you'd say, hey, we want to partner with you for an extended long time when you're 23 or 24, not when you're 30 and this contract's going to expire when you're 43. And everybody knows that you're not going to be a player that's going to be productive at the major league level at that point. So I'm all for it. And they have every opportunity with all the young talent they have out that they have in their system, either at the major league level or otherwise, to look at these guys and say, we think four of these players are the ones we want to put our money on and we're going to pay them. And then the rest of the players, the whole point of rebuilding your system is to be able to cycle through players when they get expensive and bring in the next guy. And I think Baltimore, as painful as it is, would be more okay with letting a Trey Mancini go or an Austin Hayes or Cedric Mullins if the guy that replaces them comes from the system. And you know you've got another 4 or 5 years with them as opposed to signing a guy from the free agent market who you booed a couple of years ago because he was on a team that cheated when they won the World Series. So it's a matter of perspective, I think.
Do we still have a shot of signing Correa? I mean, I'm just wondering. I mean,
No, I think he finally officially signed with Minnesota. I think.
Sure? Are you 100% sure?
No, I'm not 100% sure.
I was 100% sure Ed Reed was taking the Bethune-Cookman job. I'm not 100% sure of anything anymore, Alan, honestly.
But again, that is a product of offering major league players 12 and 13-year length deals when they're 29, 30, 31. It makes no sense. Makes no sense.
None.
And ultimately, look, it was wonderful to see Miguel Cabrera reach the milestones that he did last year, 3,000 hits and 500 doubles. He's one of the greatest right-hand hitters ever. It was wonderful to see Albert Pujols do what he did. I'm so happy that he reached 700 home runs and did it in a St. Louis Cardinals uniform. But if you ask me if the contracts that they got made any sense at all, the answer is no. And I used to have this question, and it finally got answered for me on WNST Airwaves. Why, as a general manager, would you give someone a contract that long? And the answer came to me from one of the guests that general managers don't expect to have their jobs 10 years from now. So at the time that that contract starts paying negative dividends, they're gone. It's not their problem anymore, right? Dan Duquette does not have
to worry. This speaks to the LA Rams last year and giving away all their draft picks, and they had a parade, and then 11 months later, the coach is unsure if he wants to continue coaching anymore, right? Like, it is a sell your soul, and John Angelos would have a lot more latitude had the Orioles, won a couple games in Kansas City or beat the Yankees that night and took care of Detroit. And, they had chances to have a parade. Once you have a parade, you buy, maybe not in Miami if you're the Marlins, but most places, it buys you some time.
3 or 4 years of growing.
It's been since 1983 here, right? Sure. So whatever soul you have to sell out to get there, ask the Buffalo Bills, who just got eliminated and they can't win, right? That whatever you have to do to have it happen one time. I had Tom Lavero on last week, who I know you know and love as well from the Washington Times. And we talked about the Nationals winning that World Series 2 months before COVID, that they never really hung a flag. They never really sold tickets. And it's over. It's way over down there, right? Like, the ownership is over with, right? They had so much fun that they're done. They just want to cash out at this point. So it is amazing that whatever this window is that you're trying to grab, where, like, you're like, well, give them another year, let the kids play. Some people are like, dude, I've been waiting since 83. Like, let's get a pitcher in here and let's catch lightning and let's do it,
hey,
you know?
Let me tell you something. I don't do much arguing online anymore. It's just that life's too short for that nonsense.
Of course, yes.
I had a conversation with people about Trevor Bauer being out there when he got released by the Dodgers. Be like, oh, let's pick him up. And I'm sorry. I know he's a good pitcher. And I know that people deserve second chances. But there is enough in his background. There's enough about his character. There's enough in how he's been moved from organizations to tell me he's not a guy that I want, whether he can help, whether he could lead us to the promised land as Orioles fans or not. He is not the person I want in the clubhouse with young, potentially impressionable ball players. He's not the guy I want to root for to win the big game. Does that make me short-sighted? If it does, I'll live with it. But there are things more important than winning. And character goes a long way. Now, I will tell you, I'm a person who didn't care much about the trials and tribulations of people wringing their hands because the Astros cheated against them in the World Series, get to the World Series, because I know that in sports, and baseball included, everybody's cheating in one way or another. And I personally didn't think that what they did was the worst possible version of that. Did they cheat? Yeah. But I know other teams do it. I know other teams have tried it and just weren't as successful as they were. And a lot of people threw rocks at glass houses. Am I condoning it? No. But I understand that. But again, there's something about character of an individual and how they conduct themselves off the field, as well as on the field, that matters to me. And if that's hypocritical, I'll accept it. But the things that he's not only accused of, he said he did it. He just said it was consensual. But there are other pieces. If you look back at his tenure, the tantrums that he had on the field, the issues that there have been behind the scenes, they're just things that I don't want to root for, and I don't want in the clubhouse of the team that I have to root for. So I say that to say, you talked about doing anything you have to get through the window to win since it's been 1983. But I think there are limits to that. And I think it's important to decide as an organization, what those limits are for you before you get there. Now, you're talking about the character of the owners, and ultimately, does it rot from the head? We've had those discussions for 25 years. I'm sure we will continue to.
I'm convinced I'm right because I've seen the results.
I've seen the
human toll of it, right? The human toll of good people don't want to be around. I mean, there's a reason Cal Ripken's not associated with the franchise. It's 20 years later, 21 years later. There's a reason he's never taken a paycheck, been a part of what they do in any way. He hasn't, because he didn't want to sign up for it. That's very apparent, very clear. They would have loved to have had him, but like, there's a point where you're just like, I can't associate with that. I haven't bought a ticket since 2006 because, and then last week happened. I just associate myself in different ways. And much like you, I mean, I have a higher bar for what I'm willing to accept. And it's gotten higher as I've gotten older. It was high when I was 31 and fought for Peter Angelos. As I've gotten older, even more so.
Absolutely. Look, what I always focused on, because I love baseball, was whether or not the players on the team and the direct management was a value. And I found that they were. Even when they were losing, you know, season after season after season, there were players on the team you could root for. I have no posters on my wall for Peter Angelos, like, or his sons.
I'm still rooting for Melvin Mora. I'll tell you that right now, you know.
But I mean, ultimately, look, the Orioles have beliefs. Look, the reality is that cable is ultimately going to go away, and they're still tied, as is baseball, to cable boxes in terms of being able to view the Orioles or view Major League Baseball teams, and that's going to go away. And whether it's this year or 3 years from now, eventually they're going to have to spend the money so that they can stream independently. I mean, deciding which players to spend money on, all these things are real things that the Orioles should be considering, should be talking about, and should be answering questions for. Whether it's been 40 years since they won a World Series or not,
that would recruit people. That would give people confidence. That, you know what I mean? Wait, what the questions Dan Connolly was asking John Angelos last week is, give me some confidence that you and your people know what you're doing and you have a plan.
Context and confidence. And as I think we both said, nothing that he said was a gotcha moment or unreasonable. So it felt like a not just a missed opportunity, but a foolish tirade in a moment that it wasn't necessary or required.
Alan McCallum is here. He is always here. He's been here from before WSC. By the way, Alan, you ready for this? Because you're going to tell everybody in the audience when we met and how long ago it was. And I mean, I've already given Jeffrey Mayer away. So that was 96. WNST is celebrating a really momentous occasion this summer. And I know you were here that day. On August the 3rd, 1998, we opened the doors, which is also my cat's birthday and my maternal mother's birthday. And I have all the clippings, and I have Jeff Beauchamp's quotes in the paper that day saying that we would never make it. So 25 years now on August 3rd. So I'm just letting you know that, like, there's a major thing that we've done here that I need you to, you know, keep some dates open this summer. You don't eat oysters, though. You're not a seafood guy, right?
I love seafood, but oysters is not really one of them. You got some crab cakes for me, I'll wolf them down for sure.
You'll eat a crab cake. I didn't know that about you.
Are you drunk? I love crab cakes.
But I think of you as being such a picky eater. Maybe it's the cheese thing. You want to tell everybody how much you hate cheese? That weirds me out.
I hate cheese.
God.
The end.
Tacos, cheeseburgers, pizza. Gosh, you're missing out.
I eat pizza. I love pizza. I just eat it without cheese. Look,
I eat pizza.
It needs to be cooked. If it's seafood, it needs to be cooked, and I prefer it not slimy. But
at least you have the oysters then. All right.
And it needs to. It can't be alive when I walked in the place. That's very important.
You get a lot of rules. There's just too many rules for me, Alan. There's too many rules.
It can't be alive when I walked in the place. I need time for the spirit to elevate and depart from the body.
I'm just going to eat fruits and vegetables with you, and that's what we're going to stick to. No cheese on the, no au gratin on my potatoes or broccoli with you. Alan McCallum is
my doctor would be very happy to hear that.
All right, well, we'll get you back into the peak physical condition at any point here. Alan McCallum has been my baseball kemosabe for 27 years, 28 years, something like that. It's been a long, long time, longer than WNST has been here. It is always good to hear your name on the lips of other people and you doing good deeds. I don't have you around here enough, but we need to get together. We need a little Billy Joel, Stevie Nicks night together, you and me. Alan McCallum is what we need.
I turned 50 in July. I have spent my entire adult life and the vast majority of my living years affiliated in one way or another with Nestor Aparicio and WNST. So it's something that I speak
to. More than half your life.
Yes. It's something that I speak to.
You've given your life to me, Alan, is what you've done. Alan McCallum, I love him. You love him. People run into him. If you see him at the Kennedy Center, yep, that's the guy. And if you see him out in West Baltimore, yep, that's the guy too. So, hey, man, take care of yourself. I'll have you back on before opening day. Don't you worry, all right? March 30th, I got it circled. April 6th at home, I got it all circled, all right?
I'm expecting another Academy Awards show as well, so.
Oh, you want me to get Max Weiss together, do you? Okay, when are the Academy Awards? I need to put this on my calendar in order to make this happen.
Late February, early March.
I promise to make that happen. I owe Max a phone call anyway. And the both of you drive me crazy because she doesn't like Rofo Western fries and you don't eat cheese. So, you know, in the old days, I'd say we're bringing together some misguided individuals here. But you do love movies and cinema, so I'm going to let you. What's the best movie you've seen this year? Give me a movie recommendation.
Everything Everywhere All at Once, which you would absolutely hate. So don't see that. But what would you like?
Not this Dolly Parton, Tom Brady movie. I promise you. Don't put me in that area.
You might like the Elvis movie. It's a good movie, and the kid is phenomenal. Kid is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, I love the King. King's birthday was last week, so I'm all for that. On the King's birthday, I walk around the house singing King songs. That's what I do. All right, Alan, love you. It's almost baseball season. Thanks for coming on. It's good to have you, man.
Happy New Year, brother.
Saw John Angelos berating Dan Connolly, and all I thought is, I got to call Alan. I got to talk some baseball. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Our love of cheese and Alan's disdain for it. We're BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.